Welcome to the Healthy Podcast, where we invite you to invest in your well-being and unlock the secrets of vibrant health, peak performance, and wellness. Join us, Sebastian Mirau and Johannes Kettelhout, co-founders of Australia and New Zealand's leading wellness company, as we dive deep into the science, strategies, and stories that empower you to live your healthiest, happiest life. Whether you are a CEO, high achiever, entrepreneur, elite athlete, health enthusiast, scientist, or self-improvement seeker, together we will explore the cutting edge of biohacking techniques and holistic health practices with world-class experts that optimize your mind, body, and spirit. With each episode, you will walk away with practical and actionable steps to integrate in your daily life. Are you ready? Let's elevate your well-being.
Awesome, Jason. Well, thanks for being available for being on the Healthy Podcast. So excited because you are an absolute inspiration when it comes to your, well, really your life and how you live your life, but also the impact that you've had over the years. You've had your own show. You've practiced for many, many years in a completely different country, different language, and impacted so many people with your work and continue to do that. And now you're actually in the Byron Shire area in Australia, which is wonderful. And you're well known for what you do. And I would just love to have a conversation around what is a healthy lifestyle? How do you actually implement things? What do you see mostly going wrong and right? And just dive in and really giving people some hands-on advice that they can follow and, you know, make some improvements here and there in their health routine and life.
Great. I mean, thank you very much for everything you said. They're very kind of you, my experience, what I bring to the table. So I appreciate that. And it's also always an honor to work with you guys and be invited to do something like this and talk about what I love.
Nice. So it comes naturally to
you. Which is that word, health and well-being.
Yes. Hey, what was the main reason that you started? I remember your parents had a health food store, and I'm sure you got exposed to many ideas there, but was that the reason why you actually started going into the...
It's interesting, mate, because I don't know about you, but sometimes things in life happen and we actually forget because there's lots going on. And right now I'm writing my second book on longevity. So I'm coming up with a title. But while I was doing that book, I was actually thinking, okay, we had the health food store and I worked there as a kid and that was extremely influential. Looking at elderly people and observing what they were buying and seeing that it wasn't rocket science. They're often just buying simple things like vitamin C, brewer's yeast, you know, like raw materials that they knew contained specific nutrients. However, it was before that that I had probably two really important things occur. One, continually as kids, we get sick and injured if you play football. And I never liked that feeling. I always remembered when I wasn't feeling the best or when I was injured, I just wanted to be better. So even when I was younger, I appreciated how good it was to be functioning well and healthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And secondly, probably much young, 5 years before we owned the health food store, which is around 13, we received health lessons at school. And this is why I think schools need to be teaching kids about health. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to talk about it in the next hour. Our paradigm's wrong. Mm. But I remember as a kid looking at this big, strong rugby player who was playing first grade rugby at the time, and he was teaching us health, and he had up on the board a healthy artery, and the foods associated with a nice, clean artery. Mm. And then he showed us an artery that was pretty much 50% blocked with atherosclerosis, plaques, and then like hot dogs and fried food and all the, you know, negative and toxic food associated with that outcome. And so as a kid, that image was sort of etched in my mind. I did not want that. So that was a very important lesson. And once again, I think we all have these lessons on the way to health. And the one that I've observed over the years that is most influential for most people is actually losing their health to a degree where they feel sick. And they have to work to get it back.
Yeah, no, I relate to that. In fact, that's how it started for me. Basically, I had some major problems caused actually because I didn't want to go on school camp. So I got my appendix out. That was my doctor's idea. how about we take your appendix? I said, oh, that sounds good. If I don't have to go, so I didn't go. And the complications that came from there basically took part of my intestine out. And ever since I was really sort of, I could change, I could feel the weather changes. I could feel when I ate the wrong thing. And it's a blessing in disguise for sure, because that was when I was 16. And so I started quite young to figure out, oh, there are some foods that work way better for me and, you know, and what that does to my body. There was just like an overall awareness for my body that I had not before. And now I can appreciate that looking at young adults, I probably don't have that feeling of like, or that connection. I ate something an hour ago and now I feel not so good. The connection is not there. They don't see that that happens. And that's unfortunate, because then you can't even sort of self-diagnose a little bit on that level even, right?
I totally agree. And sorry to laugh when you said that story, but, you know, to avoid going somewhere to get your appendix out, there's a comedy attached to that. But as a kid, you wouldn't know.
No.
The doctor, he was a willing participant. But because of that, it might have been one of the most valuable lessons of your life and saved you from lots of other stuff.
True.
But, you know, that point you made, it's very, very difficult for somebody who's never lost their health to understand and appreciate the importance of maintaining it.
Yeah.
And I often compare this to a situation where, let's imagine we were born with wealth,
yeah,
an abundance of money, with zero instruction on how to spend it or invest it. More importantly, invest it. So what would we do? We'd go spending it. You know, because it's abundant, but we get to a certain point where we've spent too much and we'd run out of money. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very similar to most of us who are lucky enough to be born with health, where, hey, we're not taught how to invest. We're not taught how to care for. And therefore, we go spending our health. And spending might mean lollies. It might mean, you know, the wrong sort of foods, fried foods, fizzy drinks, not exercising. In our modern times now, too much time on a video screen or a game or head in a phone. And, you know, like throw some other emotional challenges in there as well to add that stress in there that was not as predominant even 20, 30, 40 years ago. And now we've got a population spending way too much health. So I'm very big on teaching people how to invest their health, how to look after their asset before they lose it. Because that person who was born wealthy, when they're left with no money, wow, they wouldn't know what to do. And that's exactly the same thing that happens for a lot of people when they lose their health to the point where they might not ever get a full recovery, okay, or where it might be prolonged, or whether they're limited for the rest of their life. And this is the most important thing, Sebastian. I try and have people understand and think about what's important to them in their lives. So let's say for you, for example, you've got young kids. Your kids are everything. The love with your wife's important. Your employees mean a lot to you, your product and your work and your purpose and so much more. Now, then I ask them, how would it be? How would your relationship be with each one of those people in your life, all the activities you love doing, all the sports you love doing without being healthy? Mm. You know, imagine right now if you couldn't practice or enjoy those things to the full extent. And then people go, oh, yeah, okay. So that's why you need to think about your health well before you lose it.
Yeah.
Because you might not ever get it back, or you might not ever enjoy those things to that extent.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's a way of educating someone. Of course, ideally, we'd understand from childhood,
yeah,
and we'd know what not to do from childhood, and we'd know what things to do,
yeah,
and do that. And we'd always have a positive balance in our health bank account.
Yeah. And I think, not offending anyone who might have a disease that, or illness that really is genetically derived, which I think not many actually are. I think the stats are quite interesting, how low it actually is that comes from there versus lifestyle or other things. But like overall, you know in advance often that what you're doing or what's happening to you will end up being really not pretty, right? And I wonder what goes through our minds that we still delay it. You know, like if a doctor says, like, look, the way that you eat, the way that you sleep, the way that you live your life is just not sustainable. You will see what happens in 10 years. But somehow that's too far away for people to start. And so you probably see people that are really like in distress, that are really in pain and suffer. But that's a point where you say, you don't actually know whether you get the...
No, yeah, you're right. There's nothing more sad for me. I've worked with hundreds of people over the years that are in their sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth decade of life and in love, let's say, or loving lots of things, but with degenerative problems that they didn't know were there that will have them never return to the point where they were. Okay, so you mentioned a couple of things there that... Why is that? You know, you mentioned, like, firstly, I thought of discipline because we're humans and it is, we need to be disciplined. We need to have routines. We need to be taught about all these things that are congruent with being able to implement healthy practices daily. And then you mentioned doctor. I think that's really important to understand that we've got like a really amazing medical system with very well-meaning and responsible doctors. However, most of our health profession are actually disease specialists. This is really important to understand. They're actually englobed under the name or the label health profession. It's similar to health insurance or Ministry of Health. That word health is misleading because none of those are caring for people's health. It's usually crisis management. It's just like car insurance. It pays for your car when it's stolen or when you have an accident. They're not paying for you to go and get maintenance, you know, like, so once again, zero criticism here. It's just the paradigm because it's called an allopathic paradigm. It's one that we think about our health, if we're lucky, when we lose it. Okay. It's lost. It's like, when do you call the fire brigade? Let's imagine you call the fire brigade. There's no fire, but you needed, let's say there's some termites in the wood that might lead to fire. Well, the fire brigade are going to arrive and go, what's going on? You know, like there's nothing, there's no fire to put out. That's what we do. We put out fires.
Yeah.
And the person will go, well, hang on, this will lead to a fire one day. And the fire will go, well, call us when the fire's there. So that's very similar to allopathic or a medical system that treats problems very well after making a diagnosis. But there's zero consideration in that for the actual underlying cause of the problem. So if we're comparing it to the situation of the fire brigade, we'd be calling the carpenters, electricians, plumbers well before, and we'd know, this is most important, we'd know who to call when. But I think what's very confusing for a lot of people is that we go to the doctor who's being responsible and honest and doing what they do, but we're putting our health in their hands.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, in reality, what they're doing is diagnosing disease. So if you're not sick already, because they're not learning about health or well-being at university, then it's like, well, they're not equipped to give nutrition or exercise advice or mindfulness advice, how to look after your mental health. So that, you know what I mean? Now, there's zero criticism once again. And thank God for the medical system when we are in crisis, when we have a fall, we have an accident, when we have a disease. Thank God. You know, my mom wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for an amazing drug that's an immunotherapy drug for cancer. However, we need to know who to look for to give us health care and health advice. And in the health profession, there's very, very few actual health professionals that focus on health.
How can we fix that? I mean, on a personal level, like where do I start? Do I go, like, so a doctor basically, if you go to a doctor and do a health checkup, they will look for, is there a fire or not? No fire, no fire, or good. But they don't look for the underlying causes that will cause fire eventually.
Exactly.
Is there actually, I mean, I'm aware of some cutting edge sort of places where you could go, they do a way better test, but is there something for, you know, like more mainstream already where you can go to figure that out?
Yeah, no, great point. So ideally, the fire brigade would say, hey, we've got the contact of the best carpenter for you. The person that's going to come and get rid of the termites, the person that's going to, look, you've got a few wires there, they're open, they might actually catch fire. That's the ideal system. That we don't get that, not because they're not well-meaning. It's just that if they're not instructed with the importance of focusing on those facets, well, of course, they won't have the information to give. So in reality, we are responsible for that. We have to do the research. We have to read. We have to listen to the right podcasts. We have to look after ourselves. So most people, in reality, if they're responsible, they're looking after their house. You know, they're going and checking it. They're getting stuff replaced if it's not good. Their car, they're changing the oil. They take it for maintenance, you know, for service to change the oil and the filters, the air and oil filter and all the rest. So that's the way we work, you know. And so if we also look at those tests that you just referred to, most tests, most blood tests, the disease tests, they're not health tests. So many people who come out, oh, you're really good. In reality, they should be told you're not really bad. Does it make sense? Yeah. Because they're not necessarily good. If you're, let's say, for example, your insulin in a range of 4 to 25 is 22. Okay, now they're being told they're pre-diabetic, but back in the day, not. That's a massive range. Let's imagine it's 12. It's still not 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't understand we're good just because we have negative blood tests. It just means the disease hasn't happened yet. So if we have nocive, if we have toxic lifestyle factors occurring, meaning we're drinking alcohol regularly, we're indulging in sugar, vegetable oils, seed oils, not exercising, have poor sleep, have poor mental, emotional habits, okay, and we're not getting enough sun and all the rest, well, then we know that we're on course for something one day. Mm-hmm. It'd be like having that money in the bank and spend. We know that we're going to pay the price one day. So I truly, look, I've worked the 30 years of my profession or more, plus the how many as a kid in the health food store. I've been around health my whole life. My mission now is to educate people. I think that's where the answer lies. And I'm passionate about teaching kids, getting them on board early, getting parents on board so they know how to feed their kids. How often do you hear, right here, a parent say, oh, you know what? When they know they've got to change their diet, that's going to be really difficult because, you know, we've got to cook for the kids, so I don't want to cook twice. In other words, they're admitting they're cooking garbage or they're giving their kids less than ideal food and they can't cook healthy food for themselves because the kids won't like it. It's like we've got to start from the basics sometimes.
Yeah. I'm in the midst of that at the moment with young kids, and it's a battle and it's not easy, but, you know, sure. It's all about habits, really. Like after a while, kids just accept there will be no tomato sauce with my food. There will be no pasta or whatever it is that you decide, you know, is right for your kids or not. And it's definitely a battle, but eventually they get hungry enough. And for me, often it's actually going back to sort of 30, 40 years ago, the way that I grew up, that I know my parents grew up. And it was basically, well, there were only 3 meals. And if you miss out, you missed out and you were hungry. And, you know, you do that a couple of times and then you realize better heat. So I'm not saying it's easy, but you know, it's really about, like, let's think a little bit deeper about all of this. And you know, it's a short-term gain there of like, great, the kids are happy. I give them something that's unhealthy. It spikes the insulin, then they're hyperactive. If you give them just carbs or whatever, like, you know, it's often short-lived and yeah, but it's not easy for sure.
No. And I hope that was understood when I explained that. I do recognize a challenge for sure with parents. However, go and spend some time in a hospital. Go and be around people who are suffering from degenerative illnesses through lack of information. Because, mate, when you think about it, if we got that information at the right time in life, we'd be able to avoid so much. And you mentioned the genetic percentage before. It's around 3%.
Wow.
So we can't be blaming obesity on bad luck or genetics or high blood pressure, okay? More than 75% of problems are degenerative nature. That means they're the result of poor lifestyle choices.
Wow.
Okay? So what I think is really important to help people understand, because a lot of people would now be going, well, what do we do here? You know, like, I want to do the right thing, but how? Firstly, we change our definition of health. Okay. If I just said before that, okay, most of the health profession don't actually look after health, even a lot of naturopaths and chiropractors, it's pain-based or symptom-based using a natural intervention. That to me is not health. That's just avoiding. And I tell people a lot of times if they're coming for an adjustment, well, that's a pretty expensive aspirin if they just want pain relief. You know what I mean when I say that? Like, so let's, to understand that point, I'm going to make this definition really clear. Most people define their health based on how they feel, okay, or how they look. So-and-so looks healthy. I look healthy. I feel good. I feel energetic. I know I'm healthy because I feel like this and I don't feel like that. How many people with that definition would have woken up this morning feeling great and they pass away sometime today of a heart attack? Mate, 50% of people die in their first ever warning sign from their body that they have cardiovascular disease in a heart attack. 50%.
Wow.
Wow, that's unfair. Imagine your car. You were unlucky enough to forget to put oil in it and you're driving along, no warning light, boom. The car, the engine seizes up, gone. And there's zero you can get back for it. It's gone. There's no, see what I mean? Like that's what we're talking about. So basing your health on how you look or how you feel is very dangerous. Another one, my mum, thank God she's about to turn 80. Mm. And we got her through cancer. She smoked for 60 years. Yeah. How's that?
Yes.
Late stage lung cancer. Okay. And thank God for a number of different things. She's fine. Okay. Now, in the course, the later course of her treatment, she had to go to the chemo ward to get immunotherapy. Now, in that ward, multiple times I've looked at people and gone, oh my God, whether they be young, old, or in the middle, they don't look like they have cancer. They don't look sick.
Wow.
So what does someone who's sick look like? Yeah, so we can't use that as a definition either, okay? The definition is 100% function. So when, for example, a car's functioning 100%, we know it's healthy. When it's not, it's 10%, 20% unhealthy. It's exactly the same as the body. If I'm not functioning 100%, well, I'm not taking advantage of health, okay? I'm not healthy. I'm 10% sick. I'm 20% sick, whatever that is. We can't measure it, obviously. So let's go to the extension on that. What does a cell, and when we talk about 100% function, we talk about the function of every cell and organ in our body. What does any cell need to function 100% correctly? And this is gold. If people get this, they've got control of their health. Giving the cells 100% of what they genetically require as nutrients and depriving the cells of the toxins that they cannot be exposed to. Okay, so you can imagine, where do we go wrong? We don't get enough nutrients or we get too many toxins. So throw a few toxins at me. Sedentary lifestyle, big lunches, late dinners, poor sleep. They're all toxins. Okay? What are the nutrients we're not getting enough of? Exercise, sunlight, just mindfulness, stillness, presence, because we're busy working. You know, what else can we throw in there? Not enough of your micronutrients, your vitamins, your amino acids, your protein, all of that sort of stuff, your requirements, your genetic requirements. Because our body hasn't changed genetically. What's the number? Is it 10, 20, 30, 40,000 years? It hasn't changed. Genetically, it's the same.
Yeah, wow.
Okay. So the requirements are the same as what it was before. It's very easy to follow. And if something's new and we're not sure, there's a good chance, for example, Wi-Fi or some chemical that didn't exist 20 years ago and might have created a ligand with another chemical. So there's more than 120,000 chemicals registered in the European Union. Wow, we don't know how those chemicals react to our body. We just know that our body's not congruent biologically with chemicals. You know, so, hey, I'm not getting radical and saying, oh, avoid them. No, we've just got to do our best. You know, we live in a modern world. We've got to live. We can't be paranoid. But we either avoid them consciously, and then if we can't avoid them for some reason, let's say pollution, if you live in a busy city, we think of ways. There are ways to protect yourself. There's ways to remove toxins. And I really think that that's an important part of anyone's strategy if they want to live a long time at as close as possible to 100% function.
Yeah. So have you seen people turning around after having a health scare or just, you know, having not enough energy, whatever it is, and actually putting all these things into practice and getting back to that 100% functional or close to it?
Mate, often. It's why I do what I do. Gratification, I often say this, gratification is my currency. It's not money. You know, like I love what I do, and regularly people write a message a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after starting the protocols I put them on. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I'm always learning with every client. Mm. I'm learning that, hey, changing the diet made a difference. Getting them to walk if they suffer low back problems made a difference. Changing the mattress they're on made a difference. You know, certain supplements that are geared towards repairing their gut wall from years and years of, let's say, alcohol or who knows, whatever causes. It could be some medications that aggravate the intestinal wall. It could be, let's say, too much sugar, too much, I've already said seed oils and vegetable oils. It could even be too much of spinach and kale. Whatever it is, repairing that gut wall for a lot of people will make a difference. There's a huge proportion of people with dysbiosis, and that's an imbalance between good and bad bacteria.
Wow.
Now, if we've ever been saved, let's say many people have their lives saved by antibiotics, many others will jump on them any little sniffle they get.
Mm.
Okay, but courses of antibiotics, when they're taken, we need to follow that up with a concerted effort to balance that biome after it.
Mm.
Because the good guys are eradicated as well, and the bad guys are better at coming back stronger.
Mm.
So we carry that imbalance. Okay, and then when we go deep into the gut function, hundreds of functions that we rely on for that healthy balance between good and bad. But if we're just thinking of two that most people are aware of, 80% of our immunity comes from the gut.
Oh.
80% of our serotonin comes from the gut.
Mm.
See, when you think about how many people are suffering from depression or challenges, mental illness, that maybe they weren't aware how important their gut was. Maybe they're not, maybe they do anything to get on top of it,
yeah,
but they haven't looked at their diet yet.
Yeah.
You know? And the same thing with their immunity. I'm seeing that all the time where people's immune systems are just, they're not getting, because they're being activated due to that imbalance, they're getting sick often, you know? And when your body's getting sick often, it's dealing with inflammation, it's not putting energy into repair. So a cell like that will age faster. It won't be, the quality when it replicates isn't as good. Okay, so there's a lot of good reasons for giving your gut a lot more priority.
Gotcha.
Mate, my gut's that important to me that I spend a lot of time on it with ferments, prebiotics, probiotics, the right sort of food. Alcohol's fun. It really is. And I had really great nights on it when I was younger, but I won't go near it. Maybe a wine now and then if someone says this is amazing. It's just because I'm that vigilant around my gut health.
Yeah.
And to understand this, it's like imagine you've got a garden. You've got all these plants that are so important for you to have your flowers the way they are and your edibles and all the rest. What does the health of any flower depend on? The soil or plant? Mm. The soil, right? What, by definition, constitutes good soil? The bacteria in the soil. So if I'm going to put compost in the soil, which I do, all my old veggies, I'm putting that into the soil to feed the good bacteria. But if I come along and spray that soil with pesticide, what am I doing? I'm killing the good bacteria.
Yeah.
So the same thing happens in our soil. And what will happen? In the end, the plant will suffer. The plant health will suffer if the soil is not good. Mate, we are no different. We are ecosystems hosting 10 times more bacteria in our bodies than cells. 10 times more.
That's a big number.
It's absolutely crucial that we look after our bacteria. Hopefully I didn't get too complex there, but I really feel it's important to explain that to have people understand, hey, you know what? We've got to make conscious decisions. If we eat something that's naughty, we do it consciously. We're aware of it as opposed to doing it ignorantly and not knowing how bad that is.
Yeah.
We want to be informed.
So by the sounds of it, there's like for us to get onto, you know, stacking the odds in our favor and getting our health back, that there seems to be quite a bit of a protocol that is just obvious, like exercise, you were talking about, managing your stress, managing your sleep. That will apply for everyone, right? You can't just,
exactly.
You know, it's... It would be crazy if someone would say, like, I don't need exercise. I'm not the type of person. And it's like, okay, not sure about that. But, you know, but then there must be also something that is quite individual, that is not for, like, not everyone has to take, you know, that vitamin, this mineral, that. How do you get that one right. So
the basics,
get it for everyone, and then there's individual stuff. So how do you get on through that journey?
Let's keep the first part simple. Eat well, yeah. Move well, yeah. Think well.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I'd imagine, let's get different people. Let's get somebody who's in their 80s and we say move well.
Mm.
Well, it's individual because we can't give them the same advice that a 25-year-old bodybuilder or someone who needs to lift weights or who's actually being able to run because they love running. So we do need to be conscious of the modification around exercise, you know, as we age or as we have certain biomechanical problems, okay? What about if we say think well, okay? Think well, for me, there's so many. Then look, this is a whole other podcast, but if we can strive to be present, beautiful, okay?
Mm.
If we can strive not to have our body adapt to a situation that it needs to modify its function, great. And that's stress, basically. When we're in a certain environment for long enough where it has to adapt, then that's detrimental to us. So what a high-performing 20-year-old athlete can do, whether it be professional or, you know, like us training, is different to somebody in their 40s or 50s, and that needs to be modified for many reasons, customized around that whole cortisol thing, especially. Like, younger people they heal faster, you know, they deal with the inflammation better, and they seem not to be affected by those elevated levels of cortisol, which when they're elevated for prolonged periods of time will lower sex hormones, they'll lower digestion, memory, brain focus, concentration, and immunity and others. So, yeah, in that regard, important. Now, this is really good, and I love that question you asked, because what about diet? You know, like there's all these diets and all these different names. One thing's for certain, one size doesn't fit all, and we all have a distinct biome. Okay, so knowing that and knowing that we're eating for our biome, if it's distinct, of course, we have to eat different foods.
Mm.
Yeah? Now, here we go. This is one company I work with. There's quite a few. That's called Vione. Okay? What this company does is you send them a fecal sample and they test the genetic needs of your bacteria. So it's beautiful. The first time I did this was after I had mercury toxicity. And for 10 years after, every day I'd have garlic, lemon, and ginger in water in the morning, boom, down, to alkalize my body. And garlic's a natural antibiotic. It's got selenium in it. Each one has their properties, right? So, however, garlic contains viruses, and so does citrus, the citrusination virus, it's called. So that they picked up that I was, you know, my biome were being affected by that. Do you know what I mean? Like, but that's me. Someone else who wasn't being crazy and having the same thing every day or didn't have the same combo of bacteria wouldn't have suffered. You know, so what we've done, I've worked with them for 5 years on my body. I'll do 6 months of their recommendations and I'll retest and my body be totally tolerant to those foods again because I've rested it. So, yeah, one size doesn't fit all. We live in a society that likes to categorize and give protocols out that, no, they're definitely not applicable to everyone. So once again, Sebastian, it's why I feel and why I promote people to think about empowering themselves with knowledge. Okay. These days, you know, pretty much most countries in the world are struggling with their middle class and, you know, money's a thing. So if these courses come out and like, this is how you're going to make money, you know, you want to be a millionaire and this amount of time, why wouldn't we do the same thing for health? You know, because I know I use this phrase a lot, but someone who's healthy has 1,000 dreams. Someone who's lost their health has only one.
I love that saying.
And that's not to be a millionaire. Mm-mm. That's just to have your health back again. So why would it be any less important? And I've seen a beautiful shift in the last years, post-COVID, post-pandemic, where people really are valuing their health a lot more.
Now, so what else do we need to test to sort of know that, you know, we don't have termites in the house sort of thing? So you said the biome, that makes a lot of sense. Would that cover deficiencies as such as well?
Like, Vione's really good. They'll test the gut wall, they'll test butyric acid, they'll test all these sort of important acids as well. While they're good, of course, there's more we can do. You know, there's a whole lot of functional medicine blood tests that you can do. You know, so while most people are going to get their blood pressure done and, you know, like their cholesterol, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, they could also, in the same blood test, be asking for magnesium and zinc and selenium and other real iodine, you know, for thyroid function, because we're all deficient in iodine. So just having that knowledge of those particular ones we want in a blood test will help a lot of people as well go, oh, hang on, my iodine's low, okay? And they'll be able to supplement with that, okay? So it's really important. You know the number one reason most people don't do it? It's not covered by their health fund. They've got to dip into their pocket to pay for it. But wow, if it's $200, $300, please do what you've got to do to get those tests. It's, you're not paying for things. We pay for disease. We invest in health. That's a big thing there, isn't it? We pay, well, actually, we don't pay, but the insurance companies pay for a car wreck or the car when it's stolen. But we've got to invest in the health of the car. We've got to clean it. We've got to take it to the mechanic. That's an investment. Mm. Any investment we do with our own body and our own health, Harvard University, within the last 5 years, maybe 10 years this study has been done, they showed a 2,000% return on your investment. 2,000%.
Meaning like you can work longer, things like that.
Meaning that today, let's say I spend $2,000 on a gym membership, some supplements, something else, with their measures, because, you know, like incredible mathematicians do these statistics, and they show, I guess what?
Yeah.
Considering the number one cause of bankruptcy is paying for health bills, right? So they're showing that people aren't spending on the cancer treatment. They're not spending on those medications. They're not spending time in hospital. Yeah? They're not losing time from work, which is productivity. Yeah. So all of these factors and more, I'm sure, that I'm not quoting right now, they're what they've used to come up with that figure of 2,000%. And we've got people here going crazy if they can get 7% a year back on a real estate investment.
Yeah.
You know, or Bitcoin, whatever.
No, no, you're so right. And if I think about this whole thing of, look, you know, I want my health back rather than a million. Well, in a sense, if you, let's say you make 100,000 per year, if you can work 10 years longer because you're healthy, that's a million. Yeah. And you know, there's certainly opportunities can only be taken if you're actually ready. And as, if you get tired and sick, many opportunities are not available to you anyway anymore. Like there's, you know, you don't function that level that actually really brings that wealth and, you know, abundance to you. There's such a strong connection just in the ability of thinking clearly and having the energy to do whatever you want to do to create an income or creating other beautiful things.
Yeah. Like kids. It just requires help. Like you and your kids, for example, you know, like, look at that.
Tell you.
Any investment in your health now is not only you who benefits, it's them too. How often do I hear that? You know, like people are sick, they've got sore backs or they've had injuries or they've got avoidable illnesses, a heart attack, and they can't play with their kids. Who does that affect more? Kids as well. It's, maybe more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it does cross my mind that, you know, like I'm probably not the youngest dad. I'm, what am I, 44? And you know, I have a 9-week-old. And so I know, like, for the next 20 years, or at least for the next 15 years or something, I'm really a focal point for that human. And it depends on what I can offer this human of how their life develops. There's quite a bit to be said about the nurture part, and the parents in the beginning are really important. So for me, it's on the forefront of my mind that I'm not doing that for me, but also for the health of the family and you know, the whole dynamic of the family, that I have the energy to get up on Saturday morning and feel like doing something rather than wanted to stay on the couch and eat, you know, unhealthy food because, you know, I've given up sort of thing, right?
Yeah, mate, that's a really good point. You know, like that's why this is such a complex thing to get people motivated about something they haven't lost yet. You know, they haven't lost their health yet. It's hard to get motivated. I understand that. Pain leads people to action, you know?
Yeah.
And when we think about it as well, it's why our brain causes pain. It's why symptoms are unpleasant. Can you imagine if a symptom was pleasurable?
Yes.
Like laughing or an orgasm or something, you wouldn't go to the cause of it. You just keep doing it.
That's it.
You know, the problem is our body doesn't give us those symptoms when it should. Ideally, someone smoking, most people get that symptom the first time they try a cigarette. They have a cough. They cough it, you know, a bit. But it's actually scary to see how quick the body adapts. So, wow, the body's shown that it didn't want that. But then very quickly, and I guess the brain going, well, hang on, you know, you're not, this isn't going to change, so I won't increase that suffering. Then it adapts. And then, like in my mum's case, 60 years smoking, boom, late stage lung cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a heart attack, whatever that is.
Yeah.
We can't rely on our body to warn us via symptoms that something's wrong. It just unfortunately doesn't work that way. So please, if anyone's listening and they have symptoms, don't lose that golden opportunity to go to the cause of the problem. Find the root cause. Don't try and suppress the symptom. Do it if you want to feel relief. Fair enough. But do it at the same time as looking for the cause.
Yeah. So if we want to get onto that journey, would we just go to any doctor and say, like, look, you know, I want to go more upstream. I want to actually see the precursors of getting sick. I want to see whether I'm in the range, or is that not useful because the range that they're looking for is really, they're looking for fire. They don't look for causes that could cause fire.
Yeah. So find a good functional medicine doctor. And I've had someone looking after my mum, for example, who's an MD, and he also specialized in Chinese medicine and he studied naturopathy. So someone who's well-rounded. Yeah, someone who understands. So the other thing is it's very, very hard to get. It's not a one-stop shop. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it's important for us to have, do the research also. But at least go there first and then do your blood tests, do your functional medicine tests as well, and have an idea of what's going on. Look at things like I mentioned before, the biome, and like know where your gut is. That's a really great way of doing it before you're sick. And they'll also give you all these measures that you can actually have as a baseline to measure improvement. Yeah. And then from there, you might have an idea of specifically where you need to focus. Now, if you're asymptomatic and you've done your cardiovascular signs, like a friend of mine actually wrote to me yesterday, and she has 25% stenosis in one of her major arteries. Well, she's got some choices to make now. You know what I mean? She's asymptomatic. She doesn't want to wait for that stroke. She doesn't want to wait for the heart attack. What's she going to do? That's her decision. Does she want to turn that warning light off? You know, well, there's no warning light, but does she want to just take something and forget about it? Or does she want to look at it and go, hang on, my cholesterol's high. Why? Ah, I've got atherosclerotic plaques building up. My calcium's high. Why? You know, and then find people can help with those questions. So I think it's great to start as a base. See what's going on, remembering that most of those blood tests are disease tests. But that's nice to come out psychologically. No, hang on, I'm not sick. You know, recently I did a whole body scan. And it was quite expensive. You know, it really was. And it represented a fair proportion of my savings. But it was a full body scan, brain down to prostate, thyroid health, subclavian artery, vertebral artery, carotid artery health, heart, lung, organs, liver, pancreas, you name it, everything was done. Every joint in my body was done as well. So then I leave with an idea of, okay, yeah, I'm fine. Or I leave with an idea of, oh, there's something going on there. For example, I've worked manually also for 30 years, so I've got a little bit of arthritis in my shoulders. And by knowing that, if I'm feeling pain, and I have been, it's directed me towards rehab as opposed to medication. Because if I know that I've got arthritis and I'm take medication for pain, well, it's going to suppress the symptom, but it's not going to really help this. So I might want to say, no, hang on, with that information, I will actually do a rehab program to balance up that imbalance that's been caused by work and posture. So do you get my point there? It really is about being informed and informing yourself as much as you can to make the best decisions. Secondly, treat your health and your body as important as any other thing that's important to you in your life, your house, your car, your business, even your marriage, because you won't be your best for your partner if you're not your best.
Yeah. So agree with that. And I think people, and we, like, you know, including myself sometimes, don't understand that there is no magic pill. Like there's an understanding, and it's a nice outsourced sort of like safety, basically saying the medical system got us. Like they got our back, and look at all the progress. Now they can, you know, put cameras into our veins, and now we can measure this and measure that. But it's a misconception that that means we can just do whatever we want because, you know, they will bail us, the medical our system will bail us out. It just won't because we're not there. That's just an underestimate. I think we overestimate the capability of us as, you know, in the medical part. It's
true.
Or it's way harder to get there. It's really, no, you have to spend the time to get your 10,000 steps in every day. Yes. That has nothing to do with that. There might be a pill that helps you later on with, you know, staying fit or burning your fat. It's just not there. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's a little bit arrogant of humanity to just think, and of course, not all of humanity, it's the Western world mostly, to actually say, yeah, you know, I got that. I have health insurance. They will bail me out. I said, yes. And still, you still have to do the right thing. And you still have to go to, you know, a functional medical person to really say, look, you know, I'm scanning you constantly. And that investment per year, you know, put a budget aside and say, this is the time I will spend on my health. This is the habit that I will create per year that it comes in. As you get older, there will be also more that are required because you actually realize, oh, I've done that. An example might be, I know my mind is often too busy. Do a Qigong class every week and stick with it. And if you say this is not for me, find something else for your mind first before you just stop and you're back to square one. That's just not how it goes. And I think we humans forget that there's a responsibility on us.
Totally, 100%. And it's not a lottery whether someone gets to their 90s and they're still doing everything they love or not. So it's not a lottery. You know, it's not good luck if someone gets to their 90s and they're still functional. They're practicing habits every day. Routine's important. Movement's important. Good dietary habits are important. Avoiding the toxins is important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see that all the time. And I'm fascinated by elderly people in their 8th, 9th, and 10th decades of life that are smashing it. And that is because they've got so much to teach us. However, when I say so much, it's not rocket science. It's the basics, guys. Avoid the toxins. Hey, yeah, I had a little wine now and then or a little bit of alcohol. Yeah, okay. I had my dessert now and then. However, I didn't eat big meal sizes. You know, look at the Japanese in Okinawa. They eat till they're 80% full. Love it. In the blue zones of the world, there's a reason why they're living past 100 years of age. You know, low intensity, continual exercise during the day. Movement's important. And so it's not good luck. It really isn't. And for anyone listening who might be, I understand they might be in a situation where they might be overweight, they might be limited, their energy might be down. Please never underestimate the power, the recuperative power of your body to get you in a much different place in a very short amount of time if you give it the conditions. And so from this little chat that you and I've had, Sebastian, remember, identify your nutrients, favor them. Identify your toxins, avoid or minimize. Let your body do the rest. Your body is the most incredible healing machine you can imagine. It has this inherent ability to cure itself. It just can't have blockages in doing so. So it needs the raw material, the nutrients we've talked about, and it just can't be exposed to things blocking it. And that's applicable if it's a spinal problem. Okay, spinal problems affect the nervous communication between the brain and the body. You can, try and focus on your diet all day, but if that nerve going to your stomach is compromised from a fracture or a fall when you were younger, and that's not focused on, you'll get less nervous energy going to your stomach. And that's a very overlooked, the importance of the nervous system. Wow. And, you know, funny, because these days we know that if someone has sciatic pain, we know that it comes from their low back. Okay, when I started my career, we'd often get x-rays of legs. And we're like, it's not a problem in the leg, it's actually low back and that's the sciatic nerve. So, but it's because the legs and arms and the head have nerve receptors for pain, but the nerves going to our organs don't. So this is why when we think about posture, okay, think about this posture, right? What area, if you're looking at my spine like that, curves most when I'm looking down? Guess where those nerves go to? Those nerves go to thyroid, lung, and heart. Would you ever imagine that I could cause problems in those organs through poor posture over time? Guys, I'm not saying it's the only cause.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is please be aware of all of the causes,
yeah.
Negate the causes, promote the positives, let your body do the work. It's difficult. Someone could say that. Yeah, it's look, routine's important.
Mm.
Start your day positive. Start your day. I love that. I forget the American general. He wrote a pretty cool book, but he said, win the morning, win the day. And he always talked about making your bed. Win that moment. Get up, make your bed, start the day well. And then if you have your little two or three practices, like for me, for example, brushing my teeth, making the bed and going and having my water and whatever else I put in there, I have won it.
Yeah.
Everything else after that will be a lot easier, you know. But you probably notice on those days you don't start like that. It's like, wow, I'm out of sync. But life's a marathon.
Yes.
Every step of that marathon, if we say it's a day,
mm.
needs to be a good one because those effects are accumulative.
Mm.
So someone's in that hole at the moment. They're like, well, how do I get back to that? Because it's not about how we feel. It really isn't. It's how we function.
Yeah.
People will be motivated if they're limited. I don't have the energy. It hurts. I can't surf anymore, can't play football, can't play bowls, whatever it is. That's what hurts.
Yeah.
So if they visualize how badly they want to be back doing what they were doing and they love, or their relationship, or playing with their kids, whatever it is, and focus on it and know that that's what you're working for. If we're not wealthy, and most of us aren't, blindly following a wealth plan and knowing that bit by bit, bit by bit, bit by bit, you'll wake up one day in 5 or 10 or 15 years and you would have accumulated wealth that's going to be working for you. It's exactly the same thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. And yeah, I think acknowledging that you were talking earlier that you don't have a health subject as such in the curriculum. Normally you don't anyway. I grew up, I think I didn't love school, but you know, that there were certainly, we had a couple of sessions where we actually went to a health insurance and they showed us how to cook healthy. Like that was not often, maybe 3 or 4 sessions in total, right? But sure, I still know the recipes. And I thought, oh, that was actually a good idea and tasted good too. But
impactful, yeah.
If you think about it, I think this is really important to acknowledge what you just said about the understanding that just slowly comes. So, you know, we don't understand, or we didn't used to understand that nerves, you know, actually the problem might lie somewhere very different to where the pain occurs. And I think partly this is still the case, but you know, there's knowledge coming. And so the school system, and that's not being a conspiracy theorist, has been created to create people that can fit into the labor force, which is really like helping the Commonwealth, if you want to see it that way, of like, you know, we all want to work, we all want to contribute. So therefore, you know, we need to be skilled up to do that. And there's, I think, a massive time lag that doesn't help, because it basically means we slowly understand health better again. And slowly the community is sort of like actually a less strong, customs are less strong, all of the traditions, which means we have to bring into education what 100, 200 years ago maybe was really, really commonly known. Like you have your a probiotic food of some sort. As part of your meal, that's just normal. This is just what you eat, right? But nowadays, it's such an array of choices that it's not a given that you eat healthy or that you have a healthy routine. I could imagine. I mean, what does it take, really? Like, I mean, the conversation we just had, and we could probably go deeper. You could fit that probably in 1 year of schooling of just saying, look, if you want to look after your health, here's how you create a healthy habit. Here's how you monitor yourself. That, you know, that these are the building blocks, the pillar of health that you need to put in place. And if we would start when we were kids, much more would stick. At the moment, in reality, everyone goes onto their own sort of journey to figure this one out, when really we could start way earlier and just put this as, you know, this is just how you live your life. You just have to do these things.
Totally, mate. Yeah. Totally it. Yeah, and we've got to remember that Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yep.
Kids weren't educated to a university level in a day. And so it's a process. Yep. And we've got to be patient. And we know that just starting today, something positive is important. Learning something, adding something new, adding to that, and you know, I always compare it to a ship. And just by implementing something positive, if it only changes the course of the ship 1 degree, okay, in 10,000 nautical miles, that will be a very different destination.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got to think of. And the other really important piece of advice is that if you want to get healthy and you know that you need to, but you've got some vices, you got some naughty things you still like doing, okay, just don't let that stop you from starting taking healthier things in, positive things. Let's say it's a smoker. A lot of smokers won't try anything because they associate getting healthy with the necessity to stop smoking. But in reality, let's imagine they kept smoking and they walked more, they drank more water, they took an omega-3 supplement that's anti-inflammatory or turmeric. Hey, are they getting healthier? Are they staying the same or getting unhealthier? No, they're still continuing with an unhealthy habit, but their body is being taken slowly towards health. And what you find usually is that you do that for long enough, and that depends on each person, but as the person starts to notice their body change, okay, which is not our paradigm of health, obviously how they feel or energetically, but it is a thing. I'll go, oh my God, okay, so I might start smoking less. I might start walking more. You know what I mean? I might come home from work and not sit in front of the television, but I'll go for a walk first or walk after dinner. And mate, the beautiful thing that I'm so grateful for working in health all these years because I learn from my clients. You know, it's not all in books. So the take home is people like myself who are coaches who will guide people via whatever, workshops, retreats, online, masterclass groups, whatever it is, comes from books, but it also comes from the experience that we're gaining with our own lives and our clients. So when I see and hear someone, actually there's someone I think of right now, she's 60, early 60s, and her husband, the poor thing, he's in crisis, but he's telling me how conscious she is. So she'll get on the plane because they travel a lot for work, and she'll be there with the bands, and she'll have these bands between her knees and doing adductors and you know what I mean? Like, and turning from one side to the next, and just these habits. They're just habits that make a difference. Every single elderly people that's rocking it will tell you what their little habit is. You know, but they're not complex. So if we accept that and we just implement the basic things and we believe in our body's ability to heal and function better, then with time we will invariably be much better, function better.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, wonderful. Now, Jason, if people want to know more about what you do, you have even online courses, don't you? Like,
yes.
Yeah, fantastic. And do you do also online consultation if people are not in the country?
Yes. So there's a few exciting things happening. Look, anyone who can't come to see me personally, I do online, which is fine. Very soon, I'll be announcing like a coaching group that we'll do weekly, and it'll be very accessible because I've been thinking of a way that people can learn about their health without being affected financially. So by making it a weekly thing with a group online, it's been really effective. You know, it's a group class. We're speaking like that. There's the online spinal course. It's called Strong Back Method. And that's the culmination of 30 years of my work. It's incredible. If you follow that, you will have a stronger back. Doesn't matter what age or stage you're at. And very soon, in the next couple of weeks, my detox course, which is basically the protocols that I've worked with for 20 years of my clients successfully, and with a huge emphasis on the gut protocol. Once again, it's not rocket science, some supplements in there and dietary advice, but just basics to get people back to where they should be. Awesome. My book, where is my book? There it is. Secret to the Healthy Spine.
Love it.
And I would say that if someone finds me online, I'm very accessible. Everyone who writes to me, I do my best to help. I'm often finding professionals in the city where that person is or leaving. I usually leave an audio, you know, and give them advice that way. But that's our purpose, mate. If we're here to help people and guide them, that's it.
You're a man on a mission. There's no doubt about that. Love it. So that's what's your website or Instagram handle that would be best?
So it's jasongilbert.com.au.
Awesome.
That's terrific. My full name, jasongilbert.com.au. And my Instagram's jasongilbertofficial. That's the IG for that. And the reason that's official, because there was a Jason Gilbert who was an undesirable person who had some pretty bad charges against him in the state. So confusion over that.
Sounds very official to be
called. It sounds too Hollywood for me, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty good. Awesome. Jason, thank you so much. Thank you so much for all your work that you're doing, all the knowledge that you spread, and the people you help. And I'm excited to continue working with you, because I just believe this is exactly where we're at. It's bringing this knowledge to the forefront and empowering people to live their best life. Yeah.
Mate, my absolute pleasure. Thank you for the invite, and congrats to you. Your questions are awesome. It's obvious that you understand a lot about health, and you want to generally help people, and that's great to work with. So I appreciate that.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, mate. Have a good one.
We hope you got a lot out of today's inspiring conversation. Please share this episode with someone you know needs to hear it. Whether they are a seasoned health expert or just beginning their wellness journey, these stories of remarkable transformation, success, and valuable insights will certainly help empower more people. Until next time, have the best life ever.